You are listening to Right Back Atcha, the 2000s pop music podcast where we have fun taking pop music seriously. Hosted by the boy long before Alexandra Burke brought Elephant in the Room to the UK, he brought Eurovision to Australia, David Lim. And me, the only person in the UK that shouts justice for Gemini, Joel Babington. Hello, David. How are you doing?
G'day, JB. I'm so excited to be doing our Eurovision special. Good to see you.
Good to see you too. So, guys, if you haven't seen the title, we are doing a Eurovision special today. And David, I think we should just jump straight into getting our very special guest on.
As you guys can probably tell, this is a very different episode to our usual ones. This is more of a special where we have a chat with a special friend or two.
Listeners, we are joined by Sam Ryder, and I'm sure you already know who he is, but in case you've been living under a rock, he is representing the UK this year at Eurovision with his track Spaceman. Hello, Sam. Thank you for joining us on Right Back Atcha. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic. One absolute intro. Can you come and can you come to Turin and just do exactly that?
Bags are packed, ready to go. I know David's ready too.
As we always say on the podcast, we are available. So Sam, we have this thing on our podcast that we actually sign ourselves up for any kind of gig possible. Like, people have said, oh, you guys should host the Brits. You guys should like host the Smash Hits Awards. We're like, we are available. So thank you for putting us forward, Sam. We will take you up on it and we will come with you to Turin.
I'm also, Sam, I'm gunning myself one day for Specsavers Spectacle Wearer of the Year. So if you know anyone, just send them my way.
Absolutely, I will do. Maybe you can like get that and then one of those Tesco things that you get when you walk through, you know, like your speciality dish or something like that. That's pretty good content, I think.
All right, we'll come with you to Turin to big you up and you can do our PR. That sounds fun.
He's full of ideas. I love it. So listen, Sam, we want to know about your Eurovision experience thus far. Let's take it to the beginning. How did it come about for you?
So basically, I wrote the song Spaceman with two friends of mine about a year and a half ago. And coincidentally, it was that day was the first day that us three had ever met each other. So that was quite odd in itself. You know what I mean? It was beautiful. Sun was blazing. And typically, we're in a studio with zero natural light, which... and maybe that was the key though, you know, because when we sat down to write this song, I say sat down, two of us did, one was on Zoom on top of a piano, but when we did, the song sort of like materialized in 10 minutes. It was totally finished. And maybe that's because we were all desperate to get out in the sunshine. But that was amazing, you know, because as a songwriter, those are the kind of the days that you dream of when you don't feel like you're even needed to be in the room. The song is just there already. All you need to do is step yourself out of the way. Let it do its thing. It's more than capable without you ruining it.
And it's got such a like simple anthemic feel to it. I feel like it's just kind of like, actually the more, the less you do to complicate it, the better. And, you know, it really packs a punch from the very first listen. So well done. Very productive day in a studio without natural light.
That was amazing, man. Thank you so much. I'm so stoked about it. It's been a really special song in its relatively, you know, a year and a half is a short amount of time in some ways. But it was never intended to be the Eurovision song. But even back then, it was the reason that, you know, I got my first record deal. And then, like, I always knew that it'd have a special moment when it was released as well. But I never dreamed it'd be Eurovision. So that's so cool.
So someone put that forward, I take it, right?
Yeah, but not me.
Not you. You're like, sorry, someone's been rummaging through my folders of songs.
My songs. But I got a call from the BBC in January, casual, I know.
Lovely.
And they were like, hey, we just heard your song Spaceman.
And you're like, security, how'd you get my number?
I mean, all right, cool. Well done. But yeah, they said, like, how would you feel about singing it at Eurovision? And as a fan, you know, like, you light up because that's such a cool opportunity. Having a career as a musician is already a long shot. The odds are so kind of, you know, they are stacked. It's not impossible by any means. I believe that anything, you can make anything sort of come into being with hard work, dedication, consistency and whatnot. But Eurovision is taking something that's already difficult and then being like, yeah, but one person, it's like the Hunger Games kind of. One person per year is like sent out. So I never kind of had this dream that it had ever happened, but here we are.
Wowzers. So you don't know who sent that at the label. It just magically made its way to Eurovision, and look at you now. So Sam, tell us, how has the Eurovision prep been going and what's it involved?
Oh, it's all kinds. It's just, it's basically, right, when this call happened, I took about 3 days. In my heart, I'd already said yes, of course. I'm a fan, you know, but I didn't want to say yes right then on the phone because I know what happens in these situations. As soon as you say yes, your phone starts going nuts because the work begins. Everyone's asking for stuff. And like at the time I was on my first ever UK tour, and that was a sold out tour. And I'd never done anything in my life that was sold out, believe me. Like I'm used to playing over years and years to empty pubs and venues, but that's not a sob story because singing always made me happy even then. Like it was my joy and my source of like sustained happiness or whatever. But yeah, at the same time, I really wanted to enjoy this milestone in my life where I was playing to people finally, you know? So Eurovision being on top of that felt like it could potentially be like a distraction in a weird way, like just too much on your plate, you know? So I kind of made an excuse, like, give me 3 days to think about it or something like that. And yeah, I did. 3 days later, said, yeah, let's do it. We met in this cafe that kind of looked like the one that the losing team go to on The Apprentice. In fact, it looked exactly, I was looking around like, is this the place? Like Sam, can we chat about you? Is this the place?
My gosh, well, you never know. They might have just secretly shot a quick VT for The Apprentice while you were there. Who knows what you've signed, Sam?
Absolutely. But yeah, that's, I mean, I kind of haven't answered your question at all.
That was fabulous anyway. In the build-up to Eurovision, is the prep any different to your tour, your gig? Is there anything new you've had to incorporate, or is it just the same process and prep that you would for, you know, a tour or gig?
Listen, there is nothing like Eurovision on the face of the earth. It is like the biggest school talent show you've ever witnessed, but times it by, I don't know, like 1,000, probably a lot more, actually. I just can't think of a...
I've got sweaty palms just hearing
that. Exact data. But, right, you've got someone, like, trying different high heels on, like, in a shower cubicle or something. Someone warming up right next to the buffet table, like, doing their sort of scales. Someone, I don't know, trying out their accordion, like, while they're sat on top of a football, like, a foosball table or whatever. It's just nuts. Everyone is everywhere.
I'm trying to figure out which of the three is you. I think you're the one in the heels.
I warmed up. I was doing my scales in a shower cubicle in Amsterdam. I'm serious. Like, Loreen was in the next room. You can hear each other, like, just warming up. And it's just bonkers, but in the best way. It's, it's just like, a school talent show. Everyone's absolutely going for it. There's not enough space for all of these people, so you're just trying to find little nooks and crannies in whatever venue to do your thing. Like, I don't know, plump up your feather boa or whatever. it's mad.
This is going to be some performance. I mean, you're giving us lots of little highlights here and there. We don't even know if it's yours.
I don't want to get you excited. I haven't got a feather boa. I just saw someone plump in there.
It's not too late.
Yeah, we can get you one. We'll send you one.
Yeah, you know, we'll pick you up one from Poundland. That's the level of our budget. Yeah. So listen, you've been saying that you are a big Eurovision fan. I have to ask, what's your earliest memory of it?
I watched it as a kid with my family every year, and it was always just about the music, you know? Like, my parents, like, always had music in the house. So every morning, it'd be like Earth, Wind & Fire, Beautiful South, Stevie Wonder, Queen. Like, it's always just blasting while they're doing the cleaning or mowing the lawn. Like, and I mean blasting. They'd have it loud enough so that they could hear it over the lawnmower. And they're like some of my earliest memories. I'm talking when I was really little. So I still remember like hearing Freddie Mercury sing Living On My Own. Like the, like that was the first thing like my mum said that I was ever singing as a kid. And yeah, like we'd always, of course, we'd like have Eurovision on the telly like every year. And it's just such joyful memories. And as it went on, you carry on that tradition with your friends, like having parties and cooking awful food and just having a blast. But like, I think the most important memory that sticks with me was when Lordi won it. And that's still my favorite ever song, which is also, I know we're going to talk about 2000s Eurovision. So yeah, that's my like core 2000s Eurovision memory. Lordi, such a banger of a tune. And you know what I love about it most? The amount of money that those prosthetics must have cost and the weight of them and how good they look. And then they top it off with just a like 50 pence plastic Finland hat. And it's just so...
I can't with the hat. Yeah, the hat was something else.
It screams last minute choice. Like walking onto the stage and then someone being like, this will be a laugh, Ted. And they're like, oh, okay.
And that is exactly what we can do for you, Sam, with the Poundland Feather Boa.
These little cheap touches.
So, you know, we have our new third co-host with us. He has moved and perfectly segued through much better than we ever would. He's told us through his favourite 2000 pop act already, Lordi. Now, do you remember seeing that for the first time?
Around the time that my mum and dad bought me my first guitar. So that was an important time in my life. Around then, I was listening to Iron Maiden, Megadeth, Metallica,
Ashley Simpson, Avril Lavigne,
yeah, Paul Brandy, like blasting it on my hi-fi. I was so into those bands and like learning guitar really badly in my bedroom, turning it up as loud as I could. And then seeing Lordi on that stage, it was just amazing to see that genre and that style represented. And it's in my head. And you know, it's just so good, man, when he has that battle axe, like, and then the wings come out, and a lot of things could have gone wrong there. Imagine if like only one wing came up, but it didn't. It hit perfectly. Yeah, just fantastic in every way. It's Eurovision to me, wrapped up in a monster-shaped bow.
Yeah. And I mean, it goes to show that it could be, as long as you're executing what you want to do kind of authentically to you or to the best that it can be. Eurovision is all about going out there and being yourself or whatever you want that version of yourself to be. Go out there and smash it and it's yours for the taking. So, you know, hats off to Lordi, probably the first time they've been mentioned. Hats off. Replace it for a 50p one, put it back on. It's probably the first time they've been mentioned on Right Back At You. So thank you, Sam, for giving Lordi their exclusive here. And, you know, we asked you 2000s, but if we skip through a few years into the mid-2010s, I believe there is another favourite that stands out to you.
Before we go there, I just want to give a quick shout to another two. I know like we should focus on the two bands. Scooch, Flying the Flag. I feel like we have to talk about it.
Oh my God. Well, lucky for you, the JB is a fan.
I watched it with fresh eyes yesterday.
Where were you in 2007, Sam?
Joel, he knew he was coming on our show. This is what's happened, right? He thought, okay, I'm going to scare these gays with Lordi, but I'm going to reel them back in with Scooch, right? That's how I'm going to make it up to them.
Honestly, I was watching it with a friend, going back, like watching some absolute classics. And I hadn't forgot about it, because you can't. As soon as your eyes have seen it once, They scorch it.
You can't unsee it. Yeah,
it's daily in my shower, Sam, every day. Every day. I'm the fifth member of Scooch.
But it is. It's just so good. Like, yeah, I just wanted to...
So, play... Oh, I mean, Sam, you've won our hearts. You already had our hearts, but bringing that up has won it all over again. So you saw it potentially for the first time yesterday or a re-memory of an unlocked yesterday.
It was a rewatch. I saw it live.
Like, you saw it live.
Like we all did. But like, I hadn't seen it since.
Yeah. And memory unlocked for Sam.
Yeah.
And what were your thoughts then? What are your thoughts now?
Just, I can't unpack it. It's amazing. When he pulls the sweet out, it's just the best moment ever. It's like this massive, like Werther's original.
Now, I remember I would just assume that you as a performer, maybe at your gigs and your tours, there's not as much props going on.
No, I haven't got
as Lordy or Scooch. Yeah. So have you been inspired to incorporate a few more moving parts?
Well, now I'm second guessing myself.
No, look, Sam, I tell you what, this year you're going out with Spaceman and you're killing it and you're going to be authentically you. But next year or in a few years' time, feel free to come back for your revision. David can get dressed up in his best Lordy rocking look. I'm going to get the biggest sweets I can find. And we'll just put it all in a magical song and your vision won't believe it.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, look, I hope you'll be thinking of Scooch and flying the flag as you are stepping out onto that stage.
Such a moment.
So speaking of two very different but wonderful classics in the 2000s, let's fast forward a few years. I knew there was another one that stood out to you in the mid-2010s.
Yes, I was actually hanging out with Conchita last night.
Oh, yes.
Casual. Fantastic beards on display. And
that's kind of the new duet or collab we need to see, you and Conchita.
And it was so lovely, like, chatting about... the experience and just like the passion for Eurovision. It was so amazing. And what a fantastic singer. Oh my gosh.
Amazing. Will it be the first of many meets, do you think?
I hope so. We did some singing together. So what
I can really see both of you on a record together, hair down, beards on show. It would be like Megan Thee Stallion and was it Cardi B? I mean, that is the bearded version of that. Visually, I can see it.
The world is waiting. It just doesn't know yet.
Exactly. The world is waiting.
So, okay, look, you've listed a lot of great Eurovision acts here, Sam. We have to ask, if you could create a UK supergroup to send to Eurovision, and you have to be in it, who would be in this group with you? What would it sound like?
Well, look, I'm not really good at anything else, so I would like to sing. Is that okay? Can I?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And okay, Ken Bruce, right? Now, bear with, Ken Bruce commentates on Eurovision.
Okay.
And I know that he plays drums. So I would quite like Ken Bruce to play drums, if that's okay with you guys.
Done.
You're an amazing
job. Oh my God, done.
I would like, you know the Polish entry when they had the person churning butter?
Yes.
Oh yes, iconic.
I would quite like to find a role for the band. Yeah. I don't know how. Maybe we could add like a big bone string, like a bass guitar, just let you pluck it. Maybe we could add
perfect
that situation to the butter.
Absolutely.
I would like to have the Lordy keyboard player because
brilliant.
Got to add a little bit of that in there. Can Conchita join? Actually, dual.
Absolutely.
Singing. This sounds like kind of a bad Slipknot at the moment. Actually, someone.
But could also be like a Bond theme as well. You know, I'm sensing big vocals.
Yeah, we can get Bjorn from ABBA on guitar.
Fantastic.
This is going to be really expensive, Sam. Yeah, I don't know if we've got the budget.
We're not running our budget.
Sounds like an absolute casserole of nonsense in my head. I have no idea what song we're playing.
Well, you have to pick, would it be Lordy-esque or would it be some kind of like, something else?
I don't know what else it could be.
It's Lordy with big vocals.
Yeah. And just like you're churning butter and Ken Bruce commentating while we're playing.
Sounds like avant-garde art to me.
Absolutely. Avant-garde comes to Eurovision.
Yeah, Yoko Ono involved, maybe.
Get Yoko Ono involved.
We might as well.
Now, you know what? That is caliber, though. You know, the world will stand up and pay attention. So I think Eurovision might not be ready for it. And it's very rare that they aren't ready for anything. But what a way to do it.
We might finally catch them off guard.
Yes, well, we look forward to seeing that. And I mean, look, Sam, you have given us so many nuggets here, but is there anything specifically you're most looking forward to about Eurovision?
I think just really being present for the whole time, because it's a real once in a lifetime experience, I think. I just want to soak up the atmosphere and the bonkersness of the whole thing and really like take those memories with me after, you know. I want to go up there and sing my head off, feel confident, feel centered, feel balanced, and remember the gratitude that I'm even there in the first place. It's going to be amazing. And I just want to, you know, I know there are tons of people at home here who are really passionate about Eurovision, and I want to do everything I can to do them proud.
Amazing.
Oh, we know you do us proud already. We can just tell, you know. I saw a tweet yesterday, and it's really telling when gays say, it's coming home. I'm like, this really... If Eurovision is not our sport, if you didn't know that, it is. Like...
It's true. I mean, I don't know if it was the same tweet or a different one, David, but people were like, quickly get Atomic Kitten on the phone, because they just did that football is coming home version of Hole Again.
Yeah.
So Sam, you have got our community riled up that we want Atomic Kitten on the phone to do the Sam Ryder is coming home Eurovision song.
Oh, we have to ask though, what is next for you after Eurovision? Have you even thought that far ahead?
Yeah, actually, I think it's really important to... my relationship with Eurovision as a fan is to not dine out on it, because it is a moment in time. It's the best moment in time of the year, obviously, but it passes like everything else, and you don't want to be caught kind of, you know, May 15th when it's all done and you don't really know what to do anymore. You have to remember that you're trying to build a career and not a moment. You know, so there's a lot of touring, a lot of festivals, tons of festivals around the UK and Europe, and even like some shows in South Korea, because they've been supporting like crazy for the last two singles.
Amazing. And
South America, hopefully, new single, album. There's tons of stuff. Like, you need to push forward and just keep singing, like I said, with the right intention and the more actually the same intention that you were singing with before anyone was listening. You know, keep it about that. Keep it about the gratitude and the joy.
Amazing, Sam. Well, it sounds like you've got a fantastic head on your shoulders. You know exactly what you're doing. Can you tease or let us know when the next single or album is coming out?
Oh, it won't be long. Don't worry.
It won't be long.
Get that butter churner out, guys.
It's not a kitten. Call me back.
Don't tease us like that, Sam. Well, look, I think that is bloody fantastic. Thank you so, so much. Now, we know you have got a huge following online, but for any of our listeners that aren't already, where can they follow you on social media?
TikTok, Instagram, Facebook. You've got that. all over the place. Just search Sam Ryder and you'll see me bright red singing my head off somewhere.
Brilliant. Well, on that note, it is coming home, as the community is saying. We are getting Atomic Kitten on the phone ASAP. Sam Ryder, thank you so, so much for joining us today. We are rooting for you. Our listeners are rooting for you, and the UK are rooting for you. Thank you so, so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been an absolute laugh and a pleasure, and so much love to all your listeners. I really appreciate the support and encouragement and positive energy. Let's keep it going. Love you.
Amazing.
Good luck, Sam.
Good luck.
Wicked. Peace, guys.
We couldn't do this episode just the two of us. I mean, we could, but I just think it wouldn't have been as fun. And in my opinion, you know, I think we needed a friend in this special. And we are so delighted to have Sean Kitchener join us.
Hey.
Hello, Sean. Welcome to the show.
You know, a guest on The X Factor, I feel like, you know, Oh, Fortuna's just finished. And
and now please sing your song. It's Britney Week. No, listeners, I'm sure you already know, but we have the gorgeous Sean Kitchener with us on the show today. Now, Sean is a writer. He has written some fantastic plays. He writes for Hollyoaks, writing for some of our finest pop turned soap stars. He's also a journalist, a DJ of Push the Button, and a lockdown hero by giving us Electric Angels and its podcast Behind the Bops, where he has interviewed Eurovision legend Jade Ewing and songwriting legend Miranda Cooper. Now, Sean, there must be something I've missed off there. And even if I haven't, please tell us and our audience who you are.
That was more detail than even I remember. So that was build on that. Thank you for having me. I'm just what's that one Britney says after the X Factor? She's like, good luck and keep doing it. thanks very much for having me. I'm very excited.
Oh, we are absolutely thrilled to have you here.
So you know what, guys? The reason we're all here today is because the time this episode comes out, it's going to be Eurovision week. And it's a big moment in the pop calendar for all of us. As we all know, it happens every year. It's kind of like Christmas. It's our Christmas, really,
in
May.
It's gay Christmas.
It's gay Christmas. So I would have to ask both of you, what is it that you love about Eurovision and what is your earliest Eurovision memory? Let's start with you, Sean.
Oh, it's just a lot of pop, isn't it? Like, but it's like it's the festival of pop. It's I don't know. It's kind of like, I remember, when I was living with my parents and I was, my brother was like, or someone, I can't remember who it was being like, oh, Eurovision, da, da, da. And I was like, well, how would you like it if, like, you know, you, when the World Cup comes on, you put your little tournament thing on the wall, you fill it all in. This is the same. I was like, it is kind of. But I think my earliest Eurovision memory, I can't actually remember specifically, but I remember we used to watch it with like me and some cousins and my family and that. And then when we were a lot younger, although I was probably older than I should have been, like I made everybody do like a parody Eurovision, but it was like it was too much. it was too extra for someone who, I think I was probably like 14, 15 at the time. I'm making like, I was like 6 or 7. I was old enough to know better. But with me and my cousins did a whole parody Eurovision situation. Like, and I was like video edit it. And I thought I was like in the control room at the BBC. I was like making my brother host it. And I was like, my cousins had to like write and perform their own songs. And then I was like, I don't know. I mean, they're probably describing it to therapists at the moment. I don't know. Because like, I was like 4 or 5 years older than them. And I was like, okay, now guys, all we're going to do is, now we're going to film results. Sean, go
this
out,
is why every family needs a gay cousin, because otherwise who's going to be in charge of the entertainment, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. And I mean, from what I know about you, Sean, it sounds very on brand.
I'd love to say I grew out of that kind of thing. Didn't.
I think the reason why we're all here is that none of us grew out of that. If anything, we grew into it.
Oh, yeah. I've got thoughts in my head of how I could do it better if I didn't.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, what is it? 10-year anniversary of it or 15-year anniversary? Yeah. Time for another.
Like, no, please don't make us do that again.
The dreaded family email that you send round. Yeah, Eurovision 15th anniversary is happening.
When we did one Christmas special, Eurovision Christmas, but I made them like, be like, do you remember back in the X Factor, like the mid-2000s, after their VT, then there'd be like a bit of like a heartbeat or like something of them in like the glamour tunnel, and like a few shots of them like looking around like Wind Machine. I made them do that and then do a walk onto the stage. But the walk to the stage was the walk from my brother's room to my sister's room.
Like, stop it!
Had to have it.
Even then, the production value and the curational eye was present. Oh my God, I can't.
My mum and aunt, really, who were the audience for this, really appreciated every little detail of that.
Amazing. And I'm sure it was a situation of them being like,
is that it? Let us finish. We're not done yet. Yeah. Look, JB, I feel like you would have had a similar situation at your household, perhaps growing up, maybe to a lesser degree with the production stuff. But were you a Eurovision fanatic as a kid?
I remember seeing the Eurovision for the first time vividly, like maybe 6 or 7. And my oldest sister was at her house. She was looking after me and Kylie, and she was like, oh, we'll just watch Eurovision. And I think I just remember instantly being fascinated. Like, I don't really understand what's going on, but this is fan-bloody-tastic. you know, we're not always the most cultured in Essex, and this was a quick stop tour around Europe. I was just like, wow, hello world. It's so great to see you. And, you know, it stayed true with me ever since. And especially as we went on in the 2000s, which we sometimes talk about on this podcast, although we consider it the greatest era of pop music or our most beloved, there were dark periods where, you know, in the later half, we had some fantastic stuff, but, you know, sugary sweet pop that we loved was sparse. So it was fantastic to always have this event every year that you know you could depend on and lean on and would give you a bit of taste of what you had loved at the end of the 90s and the beginning of the 2000s. And then especially kind of what we've picked out today, two of those really reflect that in times of moments of music I was clinging onto, because it did reflect the earlier side of the 2000s in the later half of it, if that makes any sense. Now, what about you, Davo, in Australia growing up, Eurovision, your intro to it, how was it?
You know, Australia really was my introduction to Eurovision, because growing up in Malaysia, I don't think it was really part of our radar, but it was shown on SBS in Australia, which is a public channel, and it had a bit of a cult following there. So I was aware of it, and I was aware that people really hyped for it. And it kind of, for me personally, Eurovision became very real once I moved to the UK, which was, I don't know, in 2013. And that to me really, as to what you were saying, Sean, it became World Cup for the gays, you know, especially for pop loving gays. Like, it was a communal experience. And that was where it really became a spectator sport for me. And I kind of, even though I wasn't really like checked into the contestants of any given year necessarily, I would rock up and I would get into it then and there, because there was such an atmosphere about it. But, you know, for me, Loreen, when she won with Euphoria in 2012, that was like the moment for me. That was like, okay, I need to take this seriously.
Yeah. Oh my God. That was the first year I hosted my own Eurovision party. And it was just like best Eurovision memory ever for me, because it was kind of like stars aligning. It was like, this is what it's about. Oh my God. Yeah. And 10 years on, it's still probably the best winner of the last 10 years, if not the last 50 plus.
I was going to say, that must be 10 years. Flipping heck.
Since then, David, I mean, Eurovision's come on leaps and bounds in Australia, now being part of the competition, all that and more. And I'm sure we do have you to thank for it.
And tangentially.
Next year, he will be representing Australia.
Imagine.
So on that note, this is your Right Back At Ya Eurovision captain speaking, and let's kick things off with my first choice. We're going to 2007, and it's Scooch with Flying the Flag for You. Now, what I was alluding to earlier is, although on our podcast, we have the Girls Aloud, we have the Sugar Babes, it seems like there was so much going on in pop music. We had the X Factor. As a pure pop fan, it did feel like a bit of a tough time in music. And when Scooch reformed for Eurovision with this camp-tastic pure pop number, I was a awkward, kind of closeted, but not really, but still closeted 15-year-old. And I ate this up. This was just, wow, absolutely everything. You know, and again, it really was that taste of pre-pop before, because it was an early 2000s pop band that had literally come back. This is in that dark time where Steps, it felt like an eternity since they'd broken up, and even more of an eternity until they came back. This was this little light.
I was going to say that there is an element of regional Steps about this, and I mean this with the greatest love possible in my heart. And I was actually genuinely shocked that this was a 2007 entry, not 99. But, you know, I really enjoyed the performance, JB. Like, I was like, you know me, aviation theme, anything, you've got me. Britney's Toxic and Scooch Flying the Flag. That's it.
The two definitive, the handshake emoji. So, I mean, I sent this round, David, and you think, oh, Joel's got a typo there, 2007. That's not quite right. So they released this song, this cheeky bop that in the most 2007 way thought it was being sexy and dead tongue-in-cheek, when you watch back and it's like, it wasn't much tongue-in-cheek about it. But guys, what were your first thoughts of this single? Do you remember it being released in 2007? I mean, Sean, you must have.
Yeah, I remember in the late 90s when they first popped up, feeling like a sort of resentment towards them, because they were obviously trying to be Steps, but we've already got Steps. What are you doing? But then they put out that, what was it, More Than I Needed to Know? Like, was it something they did, which I remember absolutely loving, and I remember purchasing that on CD single. So when I heard that they were coming back to try, because was this there was a selection show here, wasn't there? Am I going crazy? Was this the year when there was Terry Wogan announced, did a bit of a La La Land Moonlight?
Oh, Sean, thank you so much for bringing that up. So this was the first of three controversies around this song. Got to have a three beat.
Only three?
Well, three to mention today. So, as Sean said, this was part of the UK's Making Your Mind Up 2007. Scooch and Cindy, who is a French singer, make it to the final two. And it's Terry Wogan, and I believe Fern Cotton was his co-host. And they're the final two. They're waiting there, you know, very X Factor, waiting there, each act, the presenters sort of... And Terry Wogan announced that the winner was Cindy at the very same time that Fern, if it was Fern, announced that Scooch had won. And then there's this moment of sort of a range of happiness, sad, confusion, like, oh, well done. Wait, is it me?
One, two, three. Cindy!
And everyone was kind of shook watching live television with this.
So hang on, I don't understand, because I'm not here in the country at that time. So where was Fern and where was Terry?
I think they were in the middle and each act was on either side, but that's just
so they both were given the, they were just reading out different names.
Maybe they had like fed into their ear and Terry just heard and was like, oh, obviously Cindy. Like, whereas Fern listened for the
whole. God, that is so wild. That is live telly for you. I mean, the chaos and confusion.
The other two controversies I'll just quickly mention while we're here. Scooch got accused of miming, which obviously you can't do in Eurovision. Just the high notes. Because they had two offstage backing singers, which is completely within the rules and what you're allowed to do. So it was hugely blown out of proportion. But ultimately it's for the best, because they incorporated those backing singers in the routine. And it was fabulous. The third and final controversy we'll get into today is there was alleged plagiarism. Someone went, I've done this song.
Oh my God, really?
So there's a similar-ish sounding beat out there of another
single. Was it by Steps? Did they lodge a claim?
Hi, this is Lisa Scott Lee, and I'd like to lodge a complaint against Scooch, please. No, it was, someone sort of trying to get their name out there. But, look, if I had a track and I thought it sounded a bit like it, I'm sure I would do the same. Sean, do you remember either of those controversies at the time?
I don't really, actually, no. I vaguely
more logged into the fandom I was than you
were. The one rings a bell to me. But no, I just remember how, like, I remember either a commentator said this or... I don't think it was a member of Scooch themselves. It was someone that was like trying to hype them up. They're like, yeah, if you listen really carefully, there's some really subtle innuendo in there. And I was like, is it subtle innuendo? Is it subtle innuendo? Or is it? But I feel like when they came out first time, they only lasted like one album, didn't they? And then they kind of fizzled out. So like this time they were like, no, sod it. Like we're just going to, this is how we are going to get some, traction behind us this time, and did it do all right at Eurovision? I can't remember.
So thank you for bringing up how I learned the art form of subtlety from Scooch and this song. It's how I live my life. It did very well in my heart.
On the JB charts.
It did very well on the JB charts and the UK charts, but I would just like to bring up that due to the interest in Scooch again from this song, their one and only debut album did get a budget re-release at Woolworths for £5, which I went out and snatched that physical copy because I had to have it. And not everybody has that.
And that Eurovision single isn't on that re-release, was it?
Well, no, they weren't going to go through the cost of changing anything.
No, they were just going to bung it out and then hope some kids like you would go to Woolies and buy it.
Exactly.
Which worked, clearly.
Which I did, helped keep Woolworths in business a little bit longer. Part of me is like, was it just stock they had somewhere? But I think it was just a quick reprint, very quick and easy. But yeah, no, they still wanted people to go out and buy the single of Flying the Flag for You, which I think I probably did buy them both at the same time. I just also want to quickly give a quick shout out to, there's a more PG-ish performance of the song on Blue Peter, which... it was in the Geffen Jones era of Blue Peter, and it's him and Zoe Salmon are the fifth and sixth members of Scooch. And I just think Connie must have been fuming. But if you're sat there, guys, just quickly look the performance up. There's PG-ish more innuendos. They're just sort of more straight-laced. But there's still like blow and all that. So it is what it is, but it's a very interesting time capsule where it's like, well, it's got to be on Blue Peter.
Well, I'm going to ask both of you, because you're both here in the UK when this came out. Was it kind of something that people took in the spirit of fun, or was it more ridiculed at that time? Sean, what was it like?
I don't particularly remember the only thing I remember about it was, and I might be wrong here, but it is the most recent UK Eurovision song to go top five, isn't it, in the chart? I don't think another Eurovision song has gone top five since.
I believe so. That last moment in time where single sales were
hugely
prominent. I don't know where Jade charted, but yeah,
hang on,
we had to have it. I think it was quite split. I think a lot of people loved it for what it was, in terms of it was camp fun, and this is what Eurovision is. You either hate it or love to hate it, but still in the positive side of things. And then, yeah, there were people that were like, this is terrible. But considering we'd had like Daz Sampson and stuff, like this was like, we're doing Eurovision again, thank God.
Yeah. It was, Jade only got to number 27 on the charts.
Oh, bless her.
Number
one triple platinum on the JB charts. So, on the night, they got 19 points at Eurovision. A fantastic 12 from Malta. Thank you, Malta. And 7 from Ireland. So they were on the lower end of the board on the night. But it, as you said, Sean, it was a top five smash hit here in the UK, number 2 in Scotland and 48 in Ireland. So kind of, it absolutely gave Scooch their biggest hit. So
fair enough.
So on that note, while we aren't on the number one. Let's go to the number one. And David, who is your first choice of the night?
Oh, listen, I have decided to pick Helena Paparizou's My Number One, the 2005 Eurovision entry for Greece. She is, of course, to a lot of listeners listening, they would know she's a Greek goddess of pop and real Eurovision royalty here. I will tell you both, shockingly, this song was not my first encounter of Helena's music. I was on Joy 94.9, a community gay and lesbian radio station in Australia. And in my time there, one of her anthemic club bangers, Survivor, was playlisted on daytime radio. So that was the first time I came across the name. I was like, oh, okay, that's really cool. I've not heard of this pop star before. And then years later, I was like, oh, you mean she's a Eurovision hun? Like, iconic. And that's when I came across My Number One. And look, this is, would you agree that this is a Eurovision classic?
Oh, yeah.
Eurovision royalty, absolutely. Now, I must be honest, though, I don't remember this winning and coming out. I don't remember this song at the time. I think it was in a little dip for me, which actually doesn't make sense because I'm going to talk about a song from that year. I don't know, but it had a small blip on my cultural radar. Do you remember it, Sean?
Not from the time. I don't know if I watched it that year. I do remember the song. I didn't come back onto my radar until I think someone requested it on Electric Angels a couple of years ago. And I was like, this song! Oh my God! So I've kind of, it's become legendary retroactively.
And how this song came about to me was about 2009. I'm at college training and I was going to go and audition for Helena's tour to be a dancer.
No way. This Helena.
This Helena. So it came up on like the stage or whatever. So it was like, oh yeah, a bunch of us from college were going to go and audition. We looked up the song and was instantly obsessed with it.
So did you have to like prepare a routine to My Number One?
No, I didn't go in the end. But yeah, that was like the reference point, I believe, in the ad, in like the listing.
Fucking hell. That is iconic. What could have been?
Ever since I was like queen.
Queen, right?
Absolute queen. So how, so she came onto your radar through Joy. Was the song on Joy a very My Number One up-tempo number as well?
Oh, no, it's better than My Number One. I know I'm not meant to say that on a Eurovision episode, but please go check out a remix of Survivor. I think there are several, but it's called Survivor. It's a Survivor club anthem. You know what it's about. It's pop as a clock. You get through the night. It's that kind of banger. And I knew straight away this was a diva after my own heart. In research for this episode, I realized that this is not even her first time doing Eurovision. She had a taste of it back in, I believe she entered in 2001 as a duo. So Helena, she's Swedish, Greek, born and raised in Sweden, which is where she met her childhood friend and a bloke called Nikos. They formed a duo. They went on to enter Eurovision, which was actually the first time a Greek entry had a song that wasn't completely in Greek. So that was their song. They came 22nd and then she thought, nah, I can do much better. Came back years later, 2005, much more fabulous. She's giving Greece's answer to Beyonce. We all saw that performance in that tiny little gold dress, lots of fake tan and body glitter. I was living for it. I mean, have you rewatched that performance recently? That is iconic.
David, I'm going to give you Greece's answer to Beyonce and give you, it is the Greek Celine Dion meets Britney and it is fan-bloody-tastic. That is how you do Eurovision because she is dancing her heart out, but that powerful vocal does not dip for 1 second. And that is very rare that we see that in Eurovision. Oh, this is a pop girl through and through. But controversially, guys, I don't think she was playing those violin strings.
Oh.
Stop it. Stop it.
She was lip syncing them. But my favourite bit is when the male dancers make out the number one on the floor.
You know what? That's a level of showmanship we all should aspire to. I really respect the fact that this was a very alluring kind of pop mid-tempo, but it still incorporated elements of like traditional Greek music with like a really 2000s pop sensibility. Like it almost feels like Britney does a Greek traditional song in a way. It was sensual, but that chorus was so straightforward that anyone within like 2 seconds, you could get what it's about.
Yeah.
You know straight away what it is and you can sing it straight away. So I was just happy that she won and it was like a moment for her because I don't know what else the competition was that year because there was another entrant that we may be talking about that almost has a similar performance. But I feel like this was the one. Helena really brought it home. And I thought
it was the one.
It was, yeah, the one. And I thought what was really nice is when she said she went back to Athens and she had sort of a state welcome, you know, like it almost felt like the whole city shut down. There were flags everywhere. She got to meet the prime minister. It felt like, okay, this is what Eurovision is about. You know, you become a national treasure overnight for something like this.
I will, when I win Eurovision, become a national treasure for declining the opportunity to meet the Prime Minister. I mean, this is how you do it right. But David, did you see that this had a very notable global release?
Oh, very notable. So yeah, after Eurovision, she released her music video around different countries. There was a US release. She promoted it around the world. Look, this was number one both in Greece and in her native country, Sweden, for 4 weeks. It was certified gold in both countries. It was number four in Romania, number nine in Hungary, number 10 in Belgium, number 17 on the Eurohot 100 singles. But I love that apparently she promoted it in Australia as well. And JB went to the US. This got a fucking American release in 2006 with like that Y2K music video, which frankly looked like it came out in 2001, but we appreciate.
What, you think that was for the American release?
I thought that was the American release music video.
I was just shooketh that this got an American release, like absolutely deserved. But I was like, genuinely not everybody has that.
Yeah, yeah. Amazing.
When was the last time, guys, that we had a Eurovision song kind of do something in America? Like, I feel like Loreen's Euphoria did something, but that's just me saying it.
All I can contribute is that I know Kelly Clark did Duncan Lawrence's Arcade on karaoke recently. So that I think that went all TikTok-y or something like in the last couple of years. That's all I can contribute to that.
Have you been watching this Kelly Clarkson American song contest show, Sean, as a Kelly Clarkson stan?
I haven't actually. I don't know where to, like, obviously I only stream shows legally.
Yes, we all do. Yes, yes.
Netflix, Amazon, Hulu. I pay my TV license.
It's not streaming. It's not on Auntie. No, I don't know where it's streaming. So I haven't.
Well, Kelly is listening, so sort that out for our Sean, Kel. Thank you. But yes, David, as you said, this has this, which I love, this Y2K meets mid-2000s pop queen music video. Like, that is the way to say, hello, America. I might be 5 years late, but you're going to love it anyway.
You're going to love me anyway. You know, that Eurovision performance was giving Beyoncé of Greece, and that music video was saying, hey, I'm Mandy Moore from 2001 off Greece. So, you know, get it both ways when you can, Miss Helena. And this peaked at number... this peaked on the Billboard Hot Dance Club Play charts at number 8 and number 25 on the Billboard Hot Dance Singles charts. Literally not everybody has that.
I mean, I just hope there was like a Helena Gay Club tour.
Yeah.
Now I'm thinking, oh my God, is that what I missed out the audition for? I could have...
Because you didn't turn up.
Yeah. I could have been doing the number one sign on every sticky club, gay club in America. And I missed the opportunity. I'm sorry, Helena. And I'm sorry... America. So David, how did this do on the night? Did it do all right?
Well, it won, didn't it?
Oh, plus, yeah, it only won.
Yeah. So everyone else can just, you know, sit back and adore it.
And spoiler alert, this is the only winner we are speaking about today, so.
Oh, yeah. So it is.
Cheers, wow. Helena.
Wow. Cheers to my number one, Helena.
Well, thank you very much, David Lim. Thank you, Australia. Let's take things over back here in the UK to Sean Kitchener. What is your first choice of the episode?
I was struggling to like pick a couple that I like remember from back in the day that weren't just UK ones. And I was like, oh, what else could I do? And I was like, no, but the UK ones are actually like, they do slap. But I then started listening to a Spotify playlist of notable Eurovision songs from back in the day to see what I can remember. And then this one jumped out at me and I was like, oh my God, this is absolutely amazing. It's from Iceland in 2003. And it's a lady called Birgitta Hawkdal, and it's a song called Open Your Heart. And I, as soon as it started playing the other day, I was like, oh my God, this song, it's so of its time. Like if you watch the performance, it's just so early 2000s. She's got like a little flower in her hair. She's wearing a lovely white dress. And she looks like she's stepped out of Atomic Kitten, which obviously—
Which we love.
Which we love.
Another act we'll talk about later. But yeah, it's a big sort of sweeping, like mid-tempo sort of, I want to say pop rocky, but it's not that.
It is.
Is it?
Yeah. This is, we've gone from, in my opinion, the Celine Dion meets Britney of Greece to the Celine Dion meets Mbop of Iceland. And I think this is the softer side of a pop rock girl. It is Eurotrack meets Radio Disney.
Yes.
Yeah, but look at her performance, though. Like, she was giving it 110%. Like, the way she, like, turns the mic away from her body, like, to the beat. It was just, like, it was stage school perfection, which makes me think she is, and I mean this in the greatest compliment ever, Iceland's Martine McCutcheon meets Kate Middleton. Do you not get Kate Middleton from her? Look at her face.
If Hannah Montana era Miley Cyrus was playing Kate Middleton in a Disney Channel special, in a Disney Channel original movie,
yeah,
that would be our Brigitte.
Definitely. I was going to say the performance was given big, like, you know, those Disney Channel movies where it ends with a performance where they're like,
that.
This is it, all or nothing. Like, it was very, very that.
And it's this is like the Disney Channel original movie of Eurovision, and she's been working hard for it and she strove to get there, and then she doesn't win, but that's okay. It's the journey where she's learned the lesson. Oh, now, Sean, thank you so much for bringing this song into my life. I couldn't believe I'd never seen it before. Yeah. It is so up my street. And I don't know if you saw, but on her performance, there is the best YouTube comment of all time. Someone has written, "The closest Eurovision ever got to Hilary Duff."
Joel, did you write that?
It wasn't me or Sean that wrote that. I could not believe it.
That is absolutely what it is, though. That's what it is.
It's like, I looked at it, I was watching the performance, I scrolled down and I was like, oh, Sean, chef's kiss, what a choice. What a choice. And I mean, look, the song is perfect. She's brilliant, as we've all said, and she does the absolute Eurovision rite of passage, key change. It goes there. She's probably got a keychain in her pocket, but yeah, we absolutely love it. It's set to stun. Gorgeous music video. But yeah, I would say you're right in questioning, is it pop rock girl, Sean? But it's soft pop rock girl because it has that energy of Disney pop rock girl. So they'd give her a guitar for the album cover and we'd just believe she was a pop rock girl.
Yeah,
even though it's probably just a sweet little pop Icelandic album. But yeah, I hope there is some Icelandic gays that have loved Brigitte out there.
I was reading into it because I didn't know anything about her other than this one moment in in history. And she's been the lead singer of this band who I won't try to pronounce the name because I will get it wrong. But this Icelandic band that she's been the front person of for about like over 20 years, I think. And she's tried to go to Eurovision again a few times since then. Hasn't worked out for a God lover. But we'll always have 2003. We'll always have 2003.
Always have Eurovision at Radio Disney Awards 2003. To be honest, I think if I was ever lucky enough to represent the UK for Eurovision, I'd be banging on that door every year, be like, I'll come back if you want me. Here's a shelf load of songs I'm up for singing.
It is still, it came eighth on the night, joint eighth with Beth off from Spain, which was, I don't know if you remember that song called Tell Me, which was like, I don't remember much about it other than the choreography, which is how gay I was from a young age. it is still, I think it's their third best placement of the century, I think. So it's, you know, in Iceland, I hope there's a shrine to her in Iceland is what I'm saying. I hope there's
absolutely a day.
There needs to be like music schools and dance schools, performing arts schools in her name.
Oh my God. I hope she has the Icelandic version of the Pauline Quirk Academy.
Yeah. Oh my God. Well, she's from Husavik, which is obviously from the Eurovision movie, has a lot there. So now I'm retroactively furious that she wasn't in the movie.
Oh, she wasn't in the movie? That's a mistake.
Yeah. She could have been like Rachel McAdams' sister.
Yeah. Just in the background. Hello, I live here. That's my academy in the background.
Oh, wow. And did this chart in Iceland at all, do you know?
I don't think so. I don't know. I mean, it might have done. It didn't chart. There's no, on Wikipedia, there's no chart section.
Come on, Iceland, open your heart to this single.
It's on Spotify and it is number eight on the night of 2003. So that's pretty impressive. So hats off to you, Brigitta. Well, anyway, I don't know about anyone else, but it's getting really warm in here. So I am going to go into my second choice of the night. It is our almost pop stars, the rival superstar, turned solo star, back for another shot at it. It is Javine with 2005's Touch My Fire.
Touch my fire. Touch my fire.
I was circling around what to pick for this episode, and I know my choices are obvious, but they're true to me, and I've got to represent me, the JB. And wow, what a choice. I remember in 2005, I was absolutely obsessed with this, but it was a very notable year for the UK's Making Your Mind Up. Not only did we have Miss Javine with Touch My Fire, we had Katie Price turning her hand to music for the very first time.
Oh my God, that year.
It's that year. We have Katie Price, and it was very much in the press and whatever, Javine v. Katie, they were the top two, but it was very strong contenders all around. As well as Miss Katie and Javine, we had Andy Scott Lee.
Oh my God, wow.
Oh my God, I don't remember.
Cut
that.
To the green room shots of Lisa on one side and Michelle on the other, and Sonia, Natalie Cassidy was one of the judges.
Sean's face. If only this was on video. And
I'm trying to read if you were joking or not.
No. It's already on our socials from last year, but I will obviously be sharing it again. But yeah, they all got to pick who they would want. And gorgeous Natalie Cassidy, her choice was Andy Scott Lee. And our already Queen of Eurovision, Gina G, was also competing that year to do a JB and try and represent the UK again. So very strong competition already, but Javine soared through. The nation had to have this song representing the UK. Now, Sean, do you remember this song from the time?
Yeah, I remember thinking it was a bit of a banger because I don't...
A bit.
A slight bang. No, like, it went off. I was like, oh, good for her. She's having another go. That's great. Because I was like, Real Things was obviously great. And I don't...
Surrender.
Yeah. That whole era, fabulous.
Sorry to interrupt you, but also, Sean, when you played Real Thing at Push the Button,
I didn't want to bring it up myself, but I'm glad.
Oh, I lost my shit. I really did. There might have been a mini performance where I was, and those around me might have had some footage, but I was living for it. So well done.
Oh,
you.
My God. And that was on the Girls Aloud Sugar Babes night, was it? Oh, I was in bed with COVID. I was so desperate to be there. Okay. But she had her... Bless her, she had her Girls Aloud moment that night. Very clever selection there, Sean. So, yes, you remember thinking it was a bit of a banger.
I love this one. And I was also, not only did I love it, but I was also really happy for her that she got to have that moment. I loved it. That's one of my favourite UK ones, that one.
Love that one. So what was really interesting is Old Javeen moved to Island Records for this release. And
oh, really?
What a fantastic fit that is for her.
So she had her album in 2004. And you know what, guys? Maybe one day we will do a Javeen episode or something like that where we celebrate her solo album. But I didn't realize that upon looking closer to it, that this came out the following year after her solo album. Mm. So it was a completely different label. Wow.
Well, yeah, she departed Virgin after her debut album. And I don't know about anyone else, but I always thought she was a fallen princess of Telstar. I thought album one was a Telstar Records release.
I didn't get Telstar vibes from her. I got much more like major label money vibes.
Well, I thought that's why they went bankrupt. Anyway, so that's it for another day. Eurovision competition, Javeen. It felt like it was only the following year, but in that time, and Sean, I don't know if pop music felt like this to you at the time, that one year for Javeen, it felt like at least 5 years, unfortunately. But luckily, she got to come back into prominence with this track. And I just feel like the loss of the Island Records Javeen album, because that should have happened and would have been absolute fire. But if anyone from Island Records is listening, please get Touch My Fire back on streaming. Thank you very much. So on top of this banger single, we have this music video that is a underground clubbish situation where we've got Javeen v Javeen. Sometimes there's even three Javeens dancing together. Now that's how you do it. You're like, I can be my own backing dancer. I do not need a backing dancer. I've seen The Parent Trap. I know how this works. So we get to the night of Europe and our girl slays it, even with an alleged throat infection. She's out there. She's got the choreo. She's got the move. She's got it all. But interestingly, even though this is so prominent in my mind, the actual winner of the night isn't. But when you look back at them hand in hand, Javeen and Helena, who we've already spoken about tonight, does feel very similar, doesn't it?
Yeah, I feel like that was just a product of the time, wasn't it? Like it was 2005. We'd just come out of Beyoncé's kind of Dangerously in Love era, where she had Naughty Girl, Baby Boy, Crazy in Love. And I think that kind of aesthetic and choreography, you know, mixed with the kind of Middle Eastern sound that was really on trend at that time. Because, I assume Pussycat Dolls' Buttons would have been out this same year.
Okay.
So that kind of like Bhangra Beats style is so hot at that time. And I can't believe that Helena and Javeen were in the same year. Like that is tough competition that they both literally is the equivalent of Whitney and Mariah showing up at the Oscars to present in the same dress. And then they kind of like whip it out and like do different things.
If only they had been like, wouldn't it have been so good if they were like the top two? And it kept going, depending on what
country. That would have been gay rights. Like, gay
we would have won that night, lads.
Yeah, gays would have been winning if that was like number one and number two. My number one, number two, Touch My Fire. Like, that is pride, global pride.
Javeen on the phone like, why didn't we put Touch My Number One Fire in the title just to get up there? Oh, no.
They can do a joint tour together. Can you imagine?
The My Number One Fire Tour.
Oh, my God. Coming to you at the O2. What's that room? In the
Indigo
side?
O2.
Indigo O2.
I will, when that hits the stage, that dancer's audition, I will come out of retirement to attend that audition. Javine, I'll do it for free, darling. No, I won't. I've got a very high rate. But yes, absolutely loved it. And yeah, I just had to pick it because, absolutely, because.
Is Javine in it?
It's Javine, and literally justice for Javine, powerhouse vocalist, performer and solo star. This was number 18 here in the UK, 32 on the Irish charts and 56 on the Euro Hot 100 singles. On the night, it did place 22nd at Eurovision with 18 points. Anyway, although that is very tough for me to swallow, I will let it go. And David, let's go to your second choice of the night.
So this one is a new discovery for me, but it feels so, so very me when you come to know my taste in music, especially with my love for Y2K disco bangers. I'm talking about Aphrodite's Never Let It Go, which is Sweden's entry in 2002. So never let it go, never stop. Now, this is like Y2K disco hidden gem for me. So camp. And I heard that this was actually offered to Alcazar first. And they decided to pass up on it. But like, come on. This is like a real disco treat. What do you guys think of this track?
David Lim, thank you for bringing this into my life. I can't believe I'd never heard or seen this before.
But it's very us, isn't it?
I mean, they even say at the end of the performance, like, the Destiny's Child is like the Destiny's Child of, was it Sweden? It was Sweden.
Sweden,
wasn't it?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
This is what I expect from Sweden in Eurovision, like the capital of pop music, like in this pure best time of it. Like, this is how you show this like disco pop banger, like Atomic Kitten Be With You on poppers.
It really is that. Is this your kind of take in Y2K music, Sean? Do you enjoy the disco stuff?
Oh, my God, yeah. When I watched it this time around, what made me go, oh, yeah, that song was the Hairography. It was like, it was the disco ball backdrop. It was the disco ball outfits. It was the turning around and then the hair follows in about 5 seconds later. It was just, I love it.
Yeah, I can't believe I'd never seen it before. So, Sean, this was already on your radar?
It was sort of in the back. Because what year was this? Was this
2002, yeah.
I remember seeing it at the time. I remember, like, at uni maybe having, like, a little Eurovision, like, flashback session with some friends. And it coming up then and being like, oh, my God, this song. It was a pleasure to watch it again this week. A pleasure.
It's really fantastic, isn't it? Because like for me, it feels very Heather Small meets Sister Sledge in that way, because these three were, as far as I can tell with my minimal research and what's out there, they're a trio that was basically formed for this particular project. So they were like three individuals that were doing their own things in showbiz. And I mean, like, it just seems so hella camp, and it just really worked in a way. Like, it was, you get three performers that were really committed to it, and they were serving it on the night. And also that music video, which was the most camp and ridiculous thing ever. Like, you know, we've got, it seems to be set in America first and foremost, because like it starts with a radio presenter coming out of the radio. Sounds like he's a radio DJ from Atlanta. And then like one member is like, decided to bake in the morning while everyone's really hungover. So she turns on the whisker. It's like really loud electric whisk. And then everyone's like, oh, what are you doing? And all that. And then next thing you know, they start dancing. They pull down the blinds and there's a club again. It's just like the perfect bender.
I wasn't expecting it at all to be a comedic take on things when I watched this music video. It was such a surprise.
Yeah, but why not? I feel like at that time, you know, when you put out a record like this, especially for Eurovision, like you have to have a little bit of a sense of humor to it. And I thought it was the right approach to
it. Yeah, I thought it was fabulous. It was very like French and Saunders with fabulous vocals and fabulous routine. And what I like is, and maybe I'm wrong, but when you watch the performance, it doesn't seem novelty or comedy. It seems like fantastic pop.
It seems Studio 54 for Eurovision, and then they're giving you French and Saunders comedy.
Yeah, Leia for the music video.
Yeah, for CD UK.
So, you know, comic relief, let's do a 20th anniversary. You know,
of Aphrodite, yeah.
Or, you know, a UK version. There's three individuals on the call doing their own thing in the industry. We could form...
Are you talking about us?
We could just form...
You think what I'm thinking?
Well, look, 2023, I'm available. That's all I'm going to say.
Aphrodite 2.0, here we are. The JB, the DL, the SK.
Absolutely. Now, how did this do on the night, Davo?
So Aphrodite finished eighth place in Estonia in 2002, receiving 72 points in total. Chart-wise, this was number one in Sweden. Thank you, Sweden, certifying platinum. And at the end of the year-end charts in 2002, it was number eight. So, you know, come on. Love to see the Swedes supporting their own there.
Amazing. Now, cease and desist is a term we get said to us again and again and again. So let's take it away with Sean, your second choice. It's our final choice of the night. And what a choice it's going to be. We've spoken about it many times on this pod and we'll speak about it many times again. I'm sure it was a choice we were all going to go for at one point. Sean, please take it away. Who have you picked?
Yeah, I saw your choice is coming. And I was like, I'll go for this one if no one else does. And then you didn't. And I was like, yes! I went for the definitive Eurovision song, some may say, which is Say It Again by the Jenny Frost Band, or as they are more commonly known, Precious.
Say it, say it, say it, say it, say it, say it, say it again, say it.
It's timeless, isn't it? It's timeless. Because, you know, cheating a bit in the 2000s theme because it is late 90s, but it's a few months out, isn't it?
And
the
album, okay, Sean.
So that's but yeah, what a song, what a moment, what a time in history. I don't actually think I watched this Eurovision live. I certainly don't remember it. I mean, I would have been 10, I think. I don't remember watching it. But as I said, timeless. It could release it today and it wouldn't do well today. But
it would do well.
It would, it's a bop. And, you know, it's really interesting to see that this was the birthplace of Precious and then where they went with the album, as we said with our Precious / Cleopatra episode. But I just enjoyed this moment where it was like pure pop.
Yeah. Now, don't worry, Sean. As a 2000s podcast, we consider that timeline to begin with the Spice Girls in 96 and then end... with the Saturdays.
We make up our own rules, really.
Like 2012, but then whenever we fancy it, we'll go outside that. So you are well within your gay rights.
Oh, no, we were like applauding it. We were glad that you were picking this because somebody had to represent.
Mm. So this song is the first Eurovision song that I vividly remember being obsessed with. So even though Eurovision was already on my radar, this was the song, Precious, Say It Again. I loved it then, and I've not stopped thinking about it since 1999. Like, I just, oh, I mean, look, this is my favorite Eurovision song of all time, exclamation point. Like, you cannot beat it. As you said, Sean, it is the definitive. What was really interesting about this year, the Making Your Mind Up was one of a few years where it was part of a Top of the Pops special.
Mm.
So it kicked off things with a bit more of a current pop credibility, and the girls won, of course. They had to. That's the power of Miss Jennifer Frost. and they took it away to Eurovision. Now, what did you think of the performance, guys?
Am I on drugs, or did they like were? Did Jenny have a line in the studio version? Does Jenny have lines that she doesn't have?
She doesn't have lines.
Because I could have sworn, like, I used to think back in the day, she was singing one of the lines on it. And then as more time's gone on, I'm like, she's not, that's not Jenny. Jenny does not sing. Jenny will purr, thank you, baby, but she will not sing. But the choreography is just so, like, it's so, like, year six assembly. Like, it's absolutely, it's perfection, isn't it?
It's designed to be able to be replicated by year sixes in assembly. That was the beauty of it. It was in the simplicity. And, you know, going back to your point about did Jenny sing any lines? I mean, we are a Jenny Frost podcast first and foremost, so we will always zone in on these details. But I feel like, you know, maybe the camera went to her as a kind of, hey, you know, let's see what Jenny's doing. Yeah, even though she didn't have a solo line, she was giving you essence of like a main pop girl that the camera felt like, oh, let's just have a look at what she's doing.
Have to focus on it, you know. No, you know, we can all do a step, shoulder, but only Jennifer Frost could do a step, shoulder, step, shoulder.
And yeah, listen to that emphasis. There's a difference there. There is.
Now, all I'm going to say, well, not all because we've said a lot, but if I could rock Jen's boob tube and white trousers, silver boob tube, that would be my go-to outfit to this day.
Yeah. And her hair is giving like supporting character in a, like the kooky best friend in a Richard Curtis film.
Totally. It totally is. Oh my God. Oh, I love that you guys. So take me back to that a bit, JB, because you said that was like a pop stars, not pop stars, sorry. That was a CD UK thing, was it?
Top of the Pops.
Top of the Pops thing.
BBC Top of the Pops special. So instead of like making your mind up, it was a Top of the Pops Eurovision special. Potentially six acts performed, telephone vote, precious win.
So it was like really aimed at the teens and the kind of younger
musos.
Market.
The young
was that
musos.
The first time they've done that?
It wasn't the first time, but I believe it was the last.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well,
you've peaked at Jennifer.
Precious.
No, but it is literally fantastic. It is interesting to look at. So prior to this podcast, David sent me this article about how Eurovision changed a lot in the 2000s. So it's perfect that you bring this up, really kind of from the cusp of just the beginning of pre the 2000s. And when you do watch the staging in the auditorium, it is a lot smaller to how we know and love it throughout the 2000s. And now it's kind of feels that more when it's still kind of in a studio, a TV studio feeling or a theater setup, which is just what our girls needed. Now, unfortunately, I do think the lead singer wasn't as great vocally as she is on the recording, but that is absolutely fine. It is what it is. Now, obviously, Queen Jen went on to have a soaring successful career and is still one of our favourite pop stars of all time. It is interesting that in the first ever Atomic Kitten album that she was part of, in her album Thank Yous, she thanked every member of Precious apart from the lead singer.
Did she?
Now that is a true crime podcast waiting for another day.
Wow.
Wow, that's a series.
Insert rattlesnake sound effect from Drag Race here.
Which one from Precious is Sophie?
Sophie presented on CBBC.
Because
she was thanked.
She was thanked. They still follow each other to this day.
Because I was thinking about
Joel would tell you.
and they said X to each other 2 days ago.
Sophie had the blonde curly hair. See, do you not remember from CBBC?
No, I don't know.
Oh, sure.
But I was like, because Jenny and, this is what Wikipedia taught me anyway, Jenny and Sophie started the band, is that right? And then they auditioned the other three. This is what I've learned on Wikipedia.
Well, now, as an online Precious documentary will tell you, which me and David did watch for our previous episode.
Oh my God.
Is that there was, it was, I think it was filmed around the time of this. It was filmed for this time. The management was setting up Precious to have a UK equivalent to a modern R&B girl band that could go and hit that American market. Now, Sophie did audition for the group very early on, and she brought in her friend Jenny. And when we met Jenny, she just had to join the group. She really, you know, had so much energy about her and was just perfect for this pop group that we were putting together. Now, I actually was very starstruck early on this year because I saw a member of Precious on the tube with her dog.
What?
I did.
Oh, my God.
I was just like, my jaw was on the floor.
Who?
I saw Anya on the tube. And you know when, like, as a gay man, we have these moments where you're just, like, shocked and you, like, want to look around and scream to everyone, like, oh, my God. But no one cares. But I was feeling quite disheveled, as I often do. And I was, obviously, we respect everyone and leave them to themselves. So, yeah, it was not the right time to go, can I just say I love you? But it was a moment. It was absolutely fantastic. So we were gifted with a fantastic music video for this hit from the girls. We have Girls Night In, Canary Wolf After the Office Drinks. And as it goes on, it ends with the wind machine being, the wind machine maybe potentially being a bit too strong.
Impossible.
Never too strong. It was a gay man in control of that wind machine that day.
You can handle a bit more.
More wind for Jennifer.
Now, Sean, I need to ask, when are you going to bring in wind machines for your DJ sets? Because I feel like that needs to complete the experience curation moments.
I mean, people are just going to get their hair stuck in it, aren't they? They'll be like on the floor in front of it going like...
like Beyonce when she gets her hair stuck in it and she keeps singing. That'll be me.
Professional. Also, there was so I pushed the button last month. I had to set up on my own for the first time. Well, I was in setup, like the techie side, not the whole night. I couldn't do that. But the lighting screen, there's a button that's like mist or like dry ice or something like that. And I was like, and I like pressed it and nothing happened. And I was like, oh. But then I was like, I'll make, because the curtains were closed at that point. I was like, oh, what if it's just behind the curtain and the curtain's going to open and it's going to happen. So I didn't dare.
Tonight, Matthew, I'm going to be...
like a wall of smoke just comes out.
So next month when I haven't been left unsupervised and people that actually know what they're doing it there, I feel like you're not going to get me away from that dry ice.
So when you went to press that dry ice machine, like button, what song was that? What was the moment? What was the dry ice moment?
It was early on because it was when people were like just arriving and I was like, oh, this would be handy to have for later. And then nothing happened. So yeah. What it was.
Oh, you were just pressing it on when you were playing Vanessa Amorosi, absolutely everybody. Like,
please. Oh no, I was too busy with the strobe button for that one. I was like,
good for you for trying early on, because at least you weren't like stood there DJing and being like, oh, I'm just gonna wait for my moment, really build up to it, you know. DJing for hours, you push the button. Oh.
Literally push the button and then no smoke. Yeah, no dry ice. Oh, wow.
Hopefully that will be fixed in time for my grand return as a patron of Push the Button. And I look forward to it. So how did this chart do on the night, Sean?
It did quite well in the charts, didn't it? I think it got to number 6 over here, if I'm not mistaken. Bettered since only by Scooch in terms of the... it also got to number 34 in Sweden, you'll be pleased to know, number 24 on the Eurochart R100. It came mid-table at Eurovision, it only came 12th, which, I mean, you know, could be better, could be worse, but should be much better. Only, how many points? 38 points, which, I mean...
20 more than Javine, so...
Yeah, yeah. Who won that year? It was...
me.
Denmark, Fly on the Wings of Love. By the Olsen brothers.
Not Trent Olsen, Mary-Kate and Ashley's brother.
I knew you were going to say that.
Olsen, that's a gay, like, cue word, but Olsen.
Well, what a journey it has been. Thank you, Essex. Thank you, Australia. Thank you, Europe. Thank you for joining. Now, I want us to leave this very special episode on the question that every gay man loves to talk about after at least one drink. If you could pick anyone to represent the UK in Eurovision, who would you pick and what kind of song would they have? Davo, we'll start with you because Sean looks like he's pondering.
You know what? I'm going to say this before anyone else here says it.
Oh, no, shit. This, I should have started.
Nah, this is a big one. And you would have, you regret letting me go first. Claire Richards. And I want a mid-tempo pop banger. It has to be a Survivor anthem in the way of her solo single On My Own, but like more anthemic and more pop as O'Clock. That's what I want from Auntie Claire.
Okay. What about you, Sean?
I don't know. I thought I had a really good take like 5 years ago. Do you remember Louisa off X Factor Boy out that song? Yeah.
I love Louisa.
I was like, if
great that, vocalist.
Like 5 years ago, that song. I mean, I don't know if Louisa on stage is really that like kind of maybe like someone like Fleur East with that song.
Fleur East, Fleur East, yes.
5 years
yes.
ago, maybe would have been great. Now, I don't think I really would know. Like last year, I would not have guessed them Rocky Boys.
Maneskin.
I can't remember what they were called. Yes, yeah, yeah. I was very happy for them, but I would never have guessed they'd have won. So I don't really know.
But it's not about who in your heart you're going to send someone.
Yeah.
And what kind of songs you want to send them with?
I think I'd pick someone like, I'd go down the like Scoochie kind of avenue because they were like, not as in like, a song like that, but I'd take an act from like a few years ago. So I don't know who's
you want to get the fast food rockers back together, don't you, Sean?
Well, I was thinking like who's about, because that was about like 7 years, wasn't it, between them. I was like, who's about 7 years ago? It's probably someone like Neon Jungle or
stop it. That would be iconic. That would be so Sean. Good. Neon Jungle for Eurovision 2023.
Make it happen.
At least- oh my God. Welcome to Eurovision. Oh,
oh. Europe, get ready to stack cheddar and shop feta with the.
Yes! I'm on the 3 a.m. bazaar.
What's it mean? Who knows? That's
wild. Wow.
So my choice would have been David, very similar, but also very different to you. It would be Miss Faye Tozer giving us big solo number we've all been waiting for from Faye. It starts very slow, you know, Faye, Wind Machine. And then the beat kicks in. We get real disco up tempo, of course, with a key change, and Faye is the hero of Europe.
That would be great.
I think we'd be in trouble if we entered Claire and Faye in the same night. Like, that would be a problem. Imagine them finding out backstage, what are you doing here? What are you doing here?
When you said you were busy, I thought you were, you know, just cooking the tea at home. I didn't think you'd be at Eurovision.
When you said you were busy, I thought you were making pasta a la Clara at home.
Oh, my God. I mean, Claire would be great, but I do. Faye would get the assignment spot on, I think.
Yeah, she would, wouldn't she?
Absolutely. Yeah. And then just cut to the rest of steps, standing ovation for their girl, Faye, because I think they'd be very supportive. They seem in a fantastic place at the moment, Steps. We'd have even if they weren't as Steps, they'd have a unified approach to Faye entering and be giving her all care, their full, full support. Sean, thank you so, so much for joining us. Please tell our listeners where they can follow you.
Thank you. Down the street. Thank you so much for having me. I'm just Sean Kitchener, spelled S-H-A-U-N, thank you, on all your favourite platforms.
And where can they follow Electric Angels? Just at Electric Angels?
It's at _ Electric Angels. Unfortunately, at Electric Angels, at Electric _ Angels, and at Electric Angels _, we're all taken. So it's _ Electric Angels.
It's the only one you need, ladies and gentlemen. Fabulous. Well, you can see Sean at Push the Button. Keep your eyes peeled for when he's got a next play on, and you can tune into Hollyoaks 5 nights a week. Who knows?
Yeah. Anytime you like. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you, Sean.
Wow, guys, you have been listening to our Eurovision special. Thank you so much to tuning in. Thank you so much to our very special guests, Sam Ryder and Sean Kitchener, for joining us. David, what a way to kick off the first ever Right Back At Ya Eurovision special.
I can't believe we've done it. Like, you know what? It's just one of those things that, like, it feels like we should have done years ago, but it feels so much fun to make it this sort of group chat that is just more buzzy. And because really Eurovision is a communal experience, as we've said, you know, it's about hanging out with your friends. It's about watching it together. So it feels right to be doing it with other voices.
Absolutely. And David, that reminds me, your diary's probably already full, but you are invited to come over to mine for Eurovision.
Oh my gosh. Party time.
And listeners, as much as we'd love you all to come, it's a bit tiny, but who knows, maybe next year. Well, David, I have loved doing this so much. Thank you for doing it with me. Listeners, I hope you've loved it, and I hope this is the first of many Eurovision specials to come. We're rooting for you, Sam, and we can't wait for Eurovision this year. Gay Christmas is coming, guys. Or if you're listening after, Gay Christmas was here and it is the best time of year. You have been listening to Right Back At Ya. You can follow us at Right Back Pod on all social platforms and let us know who your favourite ever Eurovision act is. You can email our hearts, rightbackpod@gmail.com. You can follow me at Dr_Joel B on all social platforms, and you can follow him at
@LoveLimmy.
Until next time, we'll keep flying the flag for you. Bye.
Bye.